Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So if you all look on the wiki, for those of you who have internet, I guess not all of you have internet access, but let's see if I can pull that up. So if you look at the course wiki, you'll notice that I have actually updated the pages. The lectures are now online, and I've added the topics for the different lectures, including the one for today, which I am hoping to read, if it actually decides to. Anyway. Actually, I'm with Kudu, and it's like, Is the wireless in here any good?
Local wireless?
CU wireless?
Yeah.
It just absolutely crawls most of the day.
Yeah, it's supposed to be changed for now, but
anyway. Wireless end now and it still runs badly.
Anyway, so if you look at the wiki, when you actually have internet access, you can see what I put there. Should I close the door? It's like temperature versus sound. It's a bit of a dilemma here. Anyway. Oh, man. Anyway, so first, so I've changed the date of the assignment due dates on the wiki now as well. The due dates are now 2 weeks from tomorrow, and then 2 weeks after that. And the 2 weeks after that is the day of the, well, not 2 weeks after that, it's 2 weeks minus a day after that, because that is the day of the midterm review. I think it makes sense for the assignment to be due on that day, because that day I will want to go over the answers to the assignment, because, of course, that assignment will be in your midterm. So that will. So that's kind of the up through the midterm now. The assignment should be up, will be up by tomorrow, you know, sometime tomorrow, hopefully before the evening, but sometime tomorrow. Tonight, if I feel motivated, we'll see. Well, depends how sleepy I get. Anyway, before going on to talking about JavaScript objects and functions, any questions from last time? So for right now, you should be reading along in JavaScript the good parts, and ideally you should start trying to read ahead some, because I think my lectures will be more interesting, understandable, if you've actually looked at the book and then have some questions. I'm not assuming that right now, but I think you'll get more out of it. So that's so right now, I've covered little bits from chapters 1 and 2 in JavaScript, the good parts. It's interesting stuff, but it's not, you don't need to know all of it, but I think it's worth your time spending some time in at least flipping through it. Chapters 3 and 4 are very important materials, so those you should read carefully. So chapters, and then start reading the Learning Node book. We're playing with it, but I'm not going through the major Node stuff yet. I figure it makes sense to first learn JavaScript before we start talking about the environment, so you can actually have a clue about the syntax and semantics of it. So, read. And also, if you really don't want to, if you, for some reason, you don't like the style of those books or something, I'm not saying you shouldn't look at anything else. In fact, you should look at other things. There are so many resources on the internet. For example, the guy who wrote JavaScript, the good parts, has lots of videos online. He has lots of videos online, lots of blog posts and other things. Feel free to go through that material. I mean, that, and same thing, similar for Node, there are all kinds of YouTube videos on learning how to do various things and stuff. Use anything that seems useful for you. Just search away.
This is not a class where you should be saying, well, I'll just stick to the textbook. I mean, while I think it basically covers what you need, the fact is web technologies sprawl. There's lots of bits and pieces to them. It's the web stack is a complicated thing, and even though I'm trying to teach a relatively simple web stack, you still see bits and pieces around. So be proactive. And if you find I haven't covered something very clearly, bug me. Let me know. Good? So now what I want to start off with is we're talking a bit more about objects and what we have with JavaScript objects. So remember these. So first off, these an empty object. I would just say foo equals. That's an empty object. So two curly braces right beside each other. And then if you want to declare an object literal, as I showed last time, you open up the braces, have a semicolon at the end, and inside you have a bunch of properties, each of which has a colon after it and a semicolon at the end of the statement. So x is, property x is 5, so the value of foo dot x. This statement would be true. 5 equals, is equal to foo dot x. And remember, of course, using the triple equals if you're doing comparisons. So when I was talking about prototypes, the prototype chain, what was the general object-oriented terminology for that with having properties in another object appearing to be like properties for this object? You know the general term for that?
Prototype?
Well, it's a prototype, but what's the kind of the functional relationship?
Inheritance?
Kind of. It is kind of inheritance, but it's more delegation. Which means you're relying on another object to do your work. With inheritance, you have a kind of delegation pattern, but you can call what happens in JavaScript inheritance, but really it's more delegation. You're saying, I don't have this capability, I don't have this functionality, so I'll offload that work to the prototype. I don't have this method implemented, but if my prototype does, it'll handle the job. Prototypes of the object's flunkies, you'd say. So the delegation in JavaScript in terms of objects happens through the prototype property. So the prototype property you can assign to any object, and that object's properties will be consulted if a property does not exist within this object. Every object always has a default prototype, and the prototype chains go all the way back to an object. So you could say that everything inherits from object, but really it's more they all delegate to object at the end. And the reason why I'm hesitant to say inherit rather than, instead of saying delegates, is because there is no fixed hierarchy. There are no classes. There are just objects with specific relationships, and those relationships can be changed at any time during runtime. So this is objects, delegation. Now, what if I want to do something with the properties of an object? So what if I want to do some sort of reflection? What is object reflection? I want to have a look inside of an object and see what's there. So one thing you can do is there is this notation called
You all know for loops. And so in JavaScript, you can say for, so p in foo, so you can have a for loop, but instead of the for loop, the classic C style for loops are there in JavaScript, but there's also this for in syntax, which I believe is also there in Java. But so this is a collection. It treats an object's properties as a collection, and then p is assigned to the strings associated with foo. Right, say, wait.
For each loop?
No. This is for x in. It's like a for each, with slightly different syntax.
It's called a for. What is it called?
Well, it's a for loop. But it's but there's this in. For p in an object, yes?
So is it going into foo and finding the value of p and looping that many times?
No. What it's doing is it's going to iterate through the properties of foo, all of the properties, and run the loop for each of those. The order in which it iterates through the properties is undefined. There is no fixed ordering. Properties are not ordered by the time of creation or anything else. Remember, think associative array, hash. Ordering is kind of random. So JavaScript has this nice facility for iterating through. So anytime you want to reflect on an object, you can just, you'll look at the properties of an object. You can just do this, right? Don't do it. I just told you about the syntax. Don't use it. Unless you really want to use it. But in general, you won't want to. This is the case of JavaScript being a first draft language and having quirks. There is a quirk here that in general is not what you want. So what is that quirk? You have prototypes, yes. Sorry. And
so if you have a string of prototypes, the for in loop will just continue through the prototypes and keep going all the way up to object?
Yep. It follows the prototype chain and looks at the properties not just of this object, but of all the ones in the prototype chain. So in other words, you create an object with two properties, you think, I'll just iterate through this loop two times. Nope. You don't know how many times you'll iterate through because you don't know how many properties are on those other objects. You might go, crap. That seems really annoying. And it is. So, how can you... Now, let's say I assume I want to use the for in construction. Is there a way to say, I just want stuff for this object. I don't care about the prototype chain. There is. So I'll erase my X here. So you can say P in foo. So there are two operators that are of use to us here. One is the type of operator. So I can say type of foo dot x. Now, remember I told you JavaScript was loosely typed? Do you think this will give you many distinct kinds of output? Not really. It can tell you whether something like a number or a string or an object. But it's just going to say it's an object. There are no classes. It can't tell you what kind of object because all objects are kind of the same. So you have a type of operator. It works kind of like it does in another language like Java or C. But in Java, you can find out a lot by figuring out the type of an object. Here, not much. So you can kind of say the type here, but that's not really going to help you. But what could you could use is another one called has own property. So what you're asking is not just is this a valid property of it, because if you're going to access a property, if anything on the prototype chain has it, you'll get that value. But if you say has own property for a property, you can see does that property belong to this object or not. So if it's delegated to one of the objects in the prototype chain, this will return false. Otherwise, it will return true. So if this object foo here, we could say if has I think it's some trying to remember the syntax of it, but you know, I won't write it up because I'm getting the syntax wrong here. But basically, if it has, if you run it and see if you has own property, you can test that. But it's not quite what you want if you think of it in the context of complexity. Let's assume that on the prototype chain you had 100 properties. And let's say your object only has one property, or let's say 5 properties. How many times this loop are you going to iterate? You're going to iterate 100 times. Only 5 of them are not going to, no, 5 of them are actually going to do anything, but you're still looping through it 100 times. So you should be kind of going, that seems dumb. So what do you do? So given this is broken, what sort of functionality would you want, given that you really still can't use this very well?
Do I loop?
Hmm?
Do I loop?
Do while? It's, how does that help you?
I mean, because what's the point of using that? I mean, so you check if it has own property. If it returns false, then you have to, it's redundant code. You have to rewrite a code that does work with
So we want to loop over all the properties in an object. And we don't actually want to just, we don't want to loop over all the possible properties and then just do work for the ones. We just want to loop, like, if there are 5 properties in my object, I just want to loop 5 times.
Just iterate like it's a normal array.
Yeah. That's all you do. You create an array that has the properties you want, and then you just iterate through them. And that's it. Yes?
But to put, are you going to have to iterate through the whole 100 to find out which ones have the properties you want to store in an array?
I'm saying as a programmer, you know which ones you assigned.
Oh, so if you knew the whole 100.
Exactly. In other words, you know exactly the properties you defined, so you manually create an array with those things. Yes. So JavaScript also has a vector notation. The vector notation looks kind of like this, except that you just use angle brackets. So if you define this, you can define an array literal and then put whatever you want in the array. Now, of course, because of the loosely typed nature of JavaScript, you can put whatever you want into this array. You could have, it doesn't have to all be the same type. And I can put, you know, 5 here, hello, you know, and so on and so forth, and just define my array that way. Now, I talked about the dot notation for JavaScript objects. You know how there's this connection between arrays and pointers in C? There's a similar thing between objects and array notation in JavaScript. It's not quite the same, but it's kind of there. So what you can do is, I don't have really big boards, so I have to keep erasing things. So you have an array. What was I just talking about?
Maxing.
The arrays versus. So if I say foo.x, that is equivalent to saying foo. These two are equivalent. Foo.x and foo array, x is x. Because remember why I talked about objects being like associative arrays? An associative array is an array you index by strings rather than by index by strings rather than numbers. That's all this is. Regular arrays in JavaScript are indexed by numbers, integer numbers, even though there's no integer type. So if you want to iterate through the properties of an object, create an array. Why do you want an array rather than an associative? You could do kind of all syntactically exactly the same if you didn't do that, but what's the advantage of using an array?
You can iterate instead of having to know the names of every single property.
Well, it's ordered. I'm saying is you can iterate. I was saying just iterating through this. You can iterate through, and well, there's two things. One is that when you go in, you don't know what the properties are in an object, and so you do the for and stuff. But the other thing is that arrays are ordered, and so you list the properties. You'll iterate through those properties, and you know exactly what order you're going to do it in. I mean, this is kind of embarrassing stuff, actually, if you really think about it. It's just like, why did you do it this way? Couldn't you do it some other way?
So since the prototype is also a property, and you know what order it's in, then you can avoid going into the prototype?
Well, you just don't list it in your array.
So it's array of the properties you want, and then prototype separate, so you just don't touch it.
Yeah, well, I'm saying is like, what I would do if I wanted the properties to iterate through this object that I just defined here, let me say x and then y. So I've got a one with two things, and so here, to iterate through those, I would just say x and y. I would just make an array of those and then iterate through it in the normal way. Ugly? Yeah. I mean, this. I don't really have a good excuse for this to say that this is a good way of doing things or anything. I mean, this is the embarrassing stuff. If you use a language like Lua or something, you kind of see. Any of you know Lua as a language? If you ever want to look it up, Lua is a beautiful language. I have to say, it sort of is a multi-paradigm programming language. I was like, wow. It looks like what JavaScript should have been if they didn't. If you kept refining JavaScript, it would have looked like Lua. It's a pretty language. It's actually also really fast and very useful for embedded things. But it's not the language of the web, and it's not going to be the language of the web. So there we are. So has own property, type of, object literals, arrays. Okay, I think that's most of the stuff. So the next thing I want to talk about was functions. So JavaScript is an object-oriented language. So is a function an object?
Yes.
Yes. So when you say type of, that is one of the things it is useful for, because function is a distinct type. Even though it is a type of object, it will say function. Yeah. But really, in order to understand functions, you have to really think about scope. So when you talk about a programming language, what do scoping rules mean? Have you heard that term in your classes? So what is a scoping rule?
It's inside the function. It's only good inside that function, the variable. If you define it, you'll have function.
Right. So scoping refers to the visibility of identifiers. So really, you're talking about variables, constants, functions, objects, whatever you can name. Scoping rules says what names can you see and what names can you not see.
Also the lifetime. Okay.
Yes, yes. So this is visibility. Yeah. Well, lifetime's a separate issue, if this makes any sense. Scoping really strictly is about when you can see something, when you can't see it. Its lifetime is how long it exists. And if you, in a language like JavaScript, if a variable falls out of everyone's scope, then it's no longer accessible, and then it has to be garbage collected. So, did you discuss garbage collection in Java? Have you? Do you know about garbage collection? In principle, you should learn about Java garbage collection. Some of you are nodding heads. Some of you, any of you kind of go like garbage collection, you kind of like go, raise your hands or something if you kind of are, or just kind of go like look at me, kind of go, okay. No, honestly, if you don't know it, if you're not familiar with garbage collection.
Like the full functionality of garbage
collection? Or just what garbage collection is.
Yeah.
What's it for?
An idea.
Okay. I won't talk about it right now. I'm just trying to get a sense of what you guys know and what you don't know. And garbage collection is one of those things behind the scenes that you don't need a lot of the times, but sometimes you really need to understand it. And it's kind of tied up in this notion of scoping. But scoping is really about what can you see in any given part of your code. There's two basic ways to do scoping. One is dynamic, the other is lexical. Now you might think, dynamic must be good, right? Because everything should be dynamic, right? No. No, dynamic is not so good. What dynamic scoping means is the variables that, the symbols that you can access is and the meaning of them depends upon what has code is written run beforehand. So if I have a value of x, and I want to say, what's the value of x? And let's say I had some bit of code that set x equal to 7, and another bit of code that set x equals to 3. The value of x depends on which of these ran first. Reasoning about program correctness or functionality based upon the order in which code ran is a recipe for disaster. So, basically, no modern programming language does dynamic scoping, or if it does do dynamic scoping, it's in a very limited context, because it's just bad. What they instead do is lexical scoping, or textual scoping. It's what The variables your program can see is based on where it is in your program, in the text that is around it. This lexical scoping is what gives you the idea of local variables. So, now, we do actually have a bit of dynamic scoping in almost all modern languages. And that has to do with one special scope, which is the global scope. Global variables are inherently dynamically scoped. They are visible everywhere in the program. The value of a global variable depends upon what code has run. Maybe your global variable started with some static values, and then you run some code and they get changed somehow and they have some other values. In order to reason about global variables, you have to know the order, what has happened to them over the course of the execution of the program. This is the key reason why global variables are evil, and you do your best to avoid them. Bit of bad news. JavaScript has a very important global scope. Now, most languages, truth be told, actually have a global scope of some kind. For example, when you say the global scope, it's normally the top-level scope. It's the one where, classically, you'll have, in C, that's where all your functions are declared, is the global scope. But in a language like C, it's also compiled. So you know what symbols are visible at the global scope because you see them all when you compile your program. It's all static. And more importantly, you can't add things to it. You can't all of a sudden say, I'm going to have some new variable exist in the global scope. I'm going to now, create a new function in the global scope. The functions and variables and everything that you have are statically defined. That's not the case with JavaScript. This is a dynamic language. You can create and destroy things on the fly, including functions. So now you're going, what am I going to do with those? So this gets into the biggest problem of JavaScript, is that there is only one scope. So the way you deal with a global scope getting too big is you create something known as namespaces. Which really just means that you're partitioning the global scope into multiple sub-scopes. C doesn't really have support for namespaces except it kind of has support for namespaces in the sense that top-level symbols are only visible within a source file. If you want symbols to be available outside of that, they are available, kind of, but you have to declare them using header files, and the linker has to then link between them. If you don't do that appropriate linkage, you're going to get errors. Other languages have more sophisticated notion of namespaces. People talk about adding these to JavaScript. It doesn't exist now in a standardized form. So what do you do instead? Why does this matter? Think of it this way. All of your functions, if you're declaring all your top-level symbols all in the same space, there's only one scope in a web page. Where does the code in a web page come from? Everywhere. Some of it might come from Microsoft. Some of it might come from Google. Some of it might come from Amazon. Some of it might come from, Twitter. Plus all the other random providers of code. Every time you see a little widget or some other little functionality, a like button or something, it's using JavaScript that's come from some external source that's got included in the web page. All that JavaScript from all those different sources have to coexist in one single global scope. Do you think they all know about each other's variables? And I'll keep, I'm calling my thing this. Are you going to call your thing that? No. you don't have namespaces, so there is the possibility of name of variable collisions at the top level between all the code that gets pulled into a web page. So this leads to a key design pattern in JavaScript. It's not enforced by anything, but you do it to keep sane. One global global abatement, which means don't create things in the global scope. You gotta create something in the global scope, but just minimize what you create in the global scope. So if your code is well written, how many identifiers do you have to define in the global scope? One. Just one. The name of your application or package or whatever. You might say, wait a second, how can I just have one? Because that one thing is an object. And all of your other code is assigned to a property of that object, or a property of a property of your object, or a property of an array of an object, or something. It's all nested underneath that one object. And so this means that anytime, if you want to refer to X, you don't talk about X. You talk about, we could say comp246. So let's say if we had code for this class, comp242406.x. So comp246 would be an object, and I would assign everything to be a property of that object. And so if I have a whole file full of code, that will all get assigned to this. Now, as we'll see with Node, Node uses this basic JavaScript mechanism to implement something that looks like namespaces. It's quite nice. It's very elegant, but it's not using any additional features of JavaScript. This is how powerful this notion of object is, having something that's flexible. I mean, you can use it to fix a problem that you have. Now, of course, all variables are not just part of objects. JavaScript also has genuine local variables. But the local variables in JavaScript are a little bit different than what you're used to. So if you don't say anything about a variable and you just start using it, it's a global. If you want it to be a local variable, when you first use it, you say var in front of it. And then it knows it's a variable, and it's a local variable assigned. Now, when I say things are a little weird, it's that functions in JavaScript can be nested. So in a language like C, the scoping rules are, it used to be you just have function scope and then the global scope, but actually in newer versions of C, you have block level scope. So anytime you introduce curly braces, you can introduce variables at the top of that scope, like at the top of a for loop, you can introduce variables in C, and then use them within there, and they'll go away when the loop is over. There is no block level scope in JavaScript. If you declare any variables inside of a function, it is visible throughout the function. Think of it almost like you put it in the middle of it, it gets hoisted up to the top of the function. Yes.
Does it matter if you specify if it's a local variable or not when you create it?
If you don't specify it being a local variable, it becomes a global.
And that's always.
And that's bad, because now you're polluting the global namespace and it has dynamic scoping.
Even if it is a global variable, it will always be bad, even when you move the scope.
Well, when it goes to the global variable, that means the scope is the entire execution of the system.
No, when it's not a global variable. If you write var.
If you write var, then it's a local variable. And then it's defined by the lifetime of the function in which you have declared the var. It will exist, but it's a so basically you have a global scope or function scope. Function scope is a kind of lexical scoping. It's because it's based on the text of the function. It's like what variables are inside the function it can see, and the stuff otherwise that's outside it can't see. But this functional scope is not a block scope. I can't just, in C, I could just do this and just declare some variable, say I, int. So I could always, at any time in C, you can just set up some curly braces and just say, here's an integer, and that variable now is limited to the scope of this curly brace. And once it ends here, that variable goes away. You can do that in C, at least the newer iterations. You can't, in JavaScript, you can kind of do the syntax, but the variable won't be limited to this. It's going to be inside the entire enclosing function. You'll be able to access the I out here.
So this break that you were talking about last time, we get it halfway through the lecture?
Yes. Oh, am I at break time? Thank you. Yeah. I was going to mention, please remind me about when I get halfway through. I'll stop here for us. I'll stop here for a couple minutes. Okay. Let's go ahead and get started again. So just before I continue on with this, I realize I forgot a couple of things. So hasOwn property is a method that's there inherited from the global object. So you say an object, you say foo.hasOwn property, and then you give it a string, it will, this is a Boolean value. This will either return true or false from whether it has the property or not. So you can test for it like that. The other side thing I want to mention that I hadn't talked about earlier is there is a delete operation. You can use it to delete properties from an object, using the same basic syntax. The syntax of how to call things will actually become clearer after I explain functions and invocation patterns. Anyway, what I was last talking about was, so I was talking about lexical scoping and functions and the notion of nested functions. Right, so in C you have these block scopes, which means that you can specify variables to have a duration and existence for and visibility, most importantly, smaller than a whole function. There is no such thing in JavaScript. Now, on the other hand, you can create functions anywhere in JavaScript. JavaScript supports what are known as anonymous functions. It means every function doesn't even have to have a name. You define them on the fly and use them. But now, if you're going to be defining functions on the fly and passing them around, scoping gets weird. What's the weird part about scoping if you can start passing functions around?
So if you add a local variable to a function, you call another function, is it still local to that function that was initially in?
So the key challenge is you can have functions that can see variables that no longer exist. So the classic... So we'll say f equals So here I'm defining a function. And in this function, I'm going to say, I'm going to return So here I have a function nested inside of a function. I have function A. I have this f function here, which defines a function that has a parameter, one parameter, A. And then it returns another function, which has no name. This second function takes a parameter B. And all it does with it is it returns the sum of A and B. So, if I run this, I can say g equals f of 5. And then I can ask, what does g of 7 return? So if you're at the node prompt, you can type things like this. You just type in g of 7, and what value would this return? It would return 12. But see what's happening here, is that you're calling g here, and g is somehow accessing a. But this function, the execution of this function f, where it was bound to A, isn't running anymore. Now this is even, it gets even better here. Now, so this is G. Now let me create H.
F of.
And I can go ahead. What does this return? H of 7. It returns 9. 7 plus 2. But notice here, A has one value in the context of H, and it has another completely different value in the context of G. This is not dynamic scoping. For all time, no matter how, every time I call this function, I will get a new value of A that can be used inside of this function. And that will be persistent over time. Once I've called assign G, what G does will not change. Once I create H, what H does will not change. I can create other instances, and they will each not change. They won't interfere with each other because they have their own private copy of A. And you see how this... Yes?
It will come out as 7, and
yep.
Not 14.
Yeah, and if I call G now, G still, if I call G of 8 will still be 13. No interference between these. Even though they're both using exactly the same code, the instantiation of the variables they see is different. And this would have been, you know, so... Arguments are just one kind of local variable. I could have also done other variables in here and would follow the exact same rules. The variables that are defined out here. Now, if I define any variables inside here, of course, those are only about when the function is run. So those are, you know, just like B, every time this is run, we'll get a new value. But the ones in its scope, when the function were defined, those stay the same.
if I'm not mistaken, is if B is set up as a variable within the first function, then you can't even come from an outside function to determine what B might be. So you
yep.
have no idea.
No one knows what. Like, I can define, I can say here,
if there was
bar
a car.
C equals, you know, 23174. Once this returns, no one can see what this value is. Now, this is a constant, but in particular, anyone outside of G doesn't know the value of C or B. They are hidden. This is a data encapsulation method, a very powerful data encapsulation method. And all it is it's lexical scoping, but the idea is that the binding of the variables is not determined by where you run it, but it determines by where the code was defined. In a sense, the definition of the code, every time I run this, is this context with whatever else you see around it when it was instantiated.
Yes?
So when you define the G or H, you define B in the function F, or do you define
B? So the idea is that A... classic notion of this is binding. You don't think of this so much as assigning a variable, because the storage is allocated dynamically. What it means is when this function is invoked, A is associated with a value. It's assigned to it, and storage is allocated for it. Then now we come here and we define this function here. And now the meaning of this function depends upon the variables that are around it. And so they all have to be preserved. So normally the storage for A, if I wasn't done something like defining a function here, when this function exited, that storage would be released. But since I defined a function inside of it, I have to keep that version of A around, because the semantics of this depend upon it.
Similar to a recursive function anyway.
This is very much what this is what, if you learn Scheme and you talk about doing recursion in first class, this is the same thing. So the names for this is known as a closure. And when we're talking about closures, we're talking about, and the model I'm telling you about these variables having persistent thing is something known as the environment model. The environment of, so what happens when you're in here in this function, in this anonymous function here, there is an environment of all the bindings of all the variables that can be seen here. That is a data structure that is associated with this code. Every time this function is returned, it will get a new environment to go along with it, so that you have a way of interpreting the symbols inside of it. The reason why these are distinct is because they are associated with different environments, different contexts.
So basically, each time you run it, there's a special stack, memory stack.
Well, it's not a stack. It has to be on the heap, because it can't be linearly deallocated.
Okay.
So I mean, it's a persistent... I mean, the only time... That environment will only go away when it's not possible for those bindings to be used. So, for example, if I now assign to G some other something else, let's say I say G equals high. If I do this after having done this, now that function that I created that was returned can no longer be accessed by anyone because I got rid of its reference. So that's where we have garbage collection, because there was storage associated with that. If we don't reclaim it, you know, memory usage will grow in an unbounded fashion. So instead, you know, the system notices, oh, I can no longer access that function that was previously associated with it. It's now garbage. Clean it up, either now or later.
Two questions.
Mm-hmm.
In JavaScript, for first, can we give a name to the function? Second question is, if we give a
That's
name
what I just did right here.
Avoid.
That's this is giving a name to a function.
Okay.
Now, if this was inside of another function here, I would have put a var and made that local. Turtles all the way down.
But it would be within a bigger function.
Right, exactly. There would be another function here or something. But see, it doesn't really make sense to use the var keyword if you're at the global scope, because it's just going to be in the global scope.
So, the variables that you're able to see in an environment are the global scope, and what it was inside the environment?
It's whatever you all you do to figure out what's visible, it's a very simple rule. You just look at, and I can see anything here and anything in the enclosing blocks. Well, the enclosing functions. So I can see the stuff here, I can see the stuff if there was another function out here, and there, and then the global scope. I can see all that. But I can't see anything else. Well, see, this is the kind of scoping you expect in a language like C. C is lexically scoped. So is JavaScript. But the weird part is that you can't do this kind of stuff in C. That's why in C you can allocate the local variables for functions on stacks. Because when you enter it, you push it onto the stack. And when you leave the function, you pop off. You cannot do that in a language like JavaScript, because it's possible you may have to preserve the variables that you create inside the function. I mean, have you ever done something in C where you're in a function and you put in a, say, make an array as a local variable, and you return a pointer to that array, and then you try accessing another function, you go like, oh, that didn't work so well, and that's all messed up because, you know, that was allocated on the stack. And so when the function exited, that array went away. The only way for that to work is you have to do an explicit malloc. Allocate that array on the stack, on the heap. Then you can pass around pointers and they'll be around for whatever you want, and then you better make sure you reclaim it when you no longer need that array. Otherwise you have a memory leak. Same kind of things here, except that in effect everything's on the heap. You're always, in a sense, doing a malloc for all the local variables. And those local variables will stick around for as long as they are needed, as long as they can be referenced. And when they can no longer be referenced, they'll be garbage collected automatically by the system. So you can do the equivalent of allocating an array locally and returning a pointer to it. That's kind of what you're doing here. Now I could create whatever data structures I wanted inside of here. Inside of here, and then this, like if I created objects here in the local scope and put, you know, assign them to a var identifier, those objects would only be visible inside of here. They would be private. So there is no public. There is no private keywords. Well, I think those keywords are reserved, but they don't do anything in JavaScript. There's a number of identifiers that are reserved in JavaScript that actually don't do anything. But there is very much private variables, but it's not something that you just say, this is private, this is public, or anything like that. You just do this nesting. You want to make something local, you know, private, you just do it in some sort of nested context, return a function to this, and now no one can access those methods. You create objects this way, with private methods, doing these kind of tricks.
Can you return more than one function?
JavaScript does not support multiple returns. Lua does. It's really cool. But JavaScript does not support multiple returns. You return only one value. So,
if
you want to return more than one thing, what you do is you create an object, assign it to the properties, and return as much as you want. Right? That's all you do. Huh? Because objects are so flexible, if I ever want to return more than one thing, I just package it up in an object and pass it around.
but there is, but there isn't explicitly multiple returns. You have to implement it yourself. And that's what you'll find in JavaScript. And actually, when you start looking at Node.js and... Okay, we still have some time. And Node.js and other things is that they take these kind of design patterns and use them... They use these mechanisms to create design patterns, to create very sophisticated higher-level structures, which, when you look at the implementation, you realize there isn't anything new to the language. It's all convention. But these basic building blocks are so powerful, you can get very nice functionality out of it. This is, in fact, is a so you back to the question I said, how do you use Google, keep Facebook from, you know, looking at their stuff when their code, you know, is inside of a web page? Well, they create private stuff that can't be directly accessed. They can silo off their data. They just don't stick it. They just have one symbol in the global scope and then isolate it.
So if you knew, even if you knew the names of those hidden variables, you couldn't access them.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if you know the name. They just aren't visible. It's just like with pointers. You have something that someone else has a pointer to, and you don't have a pointer to that data, so you can't access it. And you can't go mucking, I mean, see if you... You really are being mean. You can be mucking around with variables and just, well, assign arbitrary pointer values and just start looking around in memory trying to find it. You can't do that in JavaScript because you don't have unrestrained pointers. So it is type safe in that sense. C is not type safe in that way. So you have these powerful function thingies. How do I turn functions, though? If this is an object-oriented language, I don't just want functions. What do I want? I want methods. So what would I want for this to be a method?
An object to contain.
Well, I need to be able to access... So if I define this function, I can make this function a property of an object simply by saying, instead of saying f, what I just say is I could say foo.m. So I have a global object foo. I want to have a create a method m. Here's my method. And then now, instead of calling f and g, I can just start saying food. I can just, using exactly the same syntax, just go foo dot m sub 5. Well, 5. Well, I can do this, and I can assign this to g equals or something. I'm just giving it another name. Psst. Yes?
Can you have foo dot g?
Yes. Yes, you can. As long as you can refer to the, you know, the simile outside, you can do those sort of circular things. Now, what's the difference between invoking foo.m versus invoking f of 5? What's the difference between these? If I say, this is a method, this I'm just sort of calling a function, looks kind of the same, and they're mostly the same. There is one key difference.
Their scope?
Well, actually, yes, it is their scope. It's the symbols that are accessible. And the key thing that you want in a inside of a method is you want to be able to access the enclosing object. If you can't do anything with the enclosing object, what's the point? So in the context of this, you're going to be able to, inside of this, you now will have a... Oh, what else? Oh, so in here, you can access a
self.
And then do stuff with it. That now exists.
And it's bound, and this now exists. It's now.
What's really annoying, of course, is self always kind of exists and can have other values. It doesn't ever get undefined. It just gets bound to really weird things when you call it in, like, function scopes. So this is part of the... You have to be a bit conscious of how you process things, because otherwise you can start... Like, let's say, for example, you assume that self is a perfectly valid object and you start adding properties to it. If for some reason it managed to get called without an object, it gets a default value. What do you think that default value is?
No.
That would be helpful, because you might actually get a runtime exception.
Undefined.
Huh?
Undefined.
Again, that would give you a runtime exception. It's the global object.
What does that mean?
It means it's a global, it's basically the default object that everyone gets. I'm not sure, oh wait, I take that back. I'm not, it's either the global environment object or it's actually object. I think it's like the global environment object. It's supposed to be object. There's a thing. But whatever the case is, it's not something you want to access. You don't want to be by default just adding properties to this shared thing. You don't want to be messing with properties of that. So, yeah, I can just do very simple syntactic things, assign this to another variable, and call this in a completely different way. And then the meaning of this can be completely messed up. So you almost, if you want to write defensively, you almost have to check to see that self is the right thing. Or what you can do is, there's some other design patterns you can do where you make sure this is, you set this manually. Like, how could you do this yourself? Yeah. Yeah. You can just create your own myself or something and then just say that's equal to the object. Well, it's a little bit trickier than that. We'll go over that later. But you have most of the power to do this sort of things yourself. Particularly, this is the way if you want to make private methods, you start doing tricks like this. So I'm almost out of time here, so we'll go through that. So, but... What I want to talk about next time is in JavaScript, there are actually four ways of calling functions. There's there's a way of calling them as a function. You can call them as methods. You can call them as constructors. And you can call them with apply. And the basic difference between them is what happens with self. And I can summarize this for you actually really easily. With the functional invocation, self gets put to some weird global value and, you know, it's all messed up. Method, it gets put to what you expect. It's the object that it was called as a method of. With apply, you specify what self is. And with a constructor, self gets put to a new object, to a new empty object that you can fill in as you wish. In general, JavaScript, the good parts, in that book, they kind of advocate, don't use the constructors. Because it's just annoying, and you don't need it, and you can do all these other things without it, and there's weird syntactic things, which I will talk about. But other people use it, so you have to recognize it and understand how it is. But all it is, there's four ways to call functions, and what self means depends upon which method you use, or which way you call it. Any other questions? Well, I'm sure there's lots of questions, but anything on your mind right now? Got yes?
Tutorial on Friday.
Yes. So assignment should come out tomorrow, and then there'll be a tutorial on Friday, yes.
Is the tutorial information going to be out at the same time on
yep.
the web? Okay, so we can get a little bit of a preview of what before the tutorial?
Maybe. I guarantee the tutorial will be up by the start of tutorial. I do not guarantee the tutorial will be up before then.
Can we get a just a general idea of what it's going to be about?
So what it's going to be going through, I want you to start playing more with Node and playing with these sort of things. So I want you to start seeing the design patterns in real code.
Okay.
But I what I really want to do is I need to make the finish the assignment, then I'll make the tutorial complement that. Yes?
Is that stuff?
Another part of the assignment will be doing some simple PGP stuff. It won't be very complicated, but just some simple things of you doing some stuff with a key and processing and stuff. So.
Will I be on the midterm?
What?
Will any of that stuff be on the midterm?
The key stuff.
Yeah. But not very fancy stuff. And I'm happy to go through it more in class, talk about it more, you know, that's unclear stuff. But once you have the assignment, you know what you're supposed to do, I think that'll help make it clear. Okay?